there's no doubt in trying to figure out what the Cardinals are going to do with the first overall pick in the draft 2.5 weeks from now. This is a big week. This is a big week in both directions. This is a big week for Josh Rosen, who, as you heard Sarah mention a moment ago, did show up for work today, the first day of off-season voluntary workouts. And I understand it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Hey, a guy showed up for work for a contract he's getting paid millions for.
Right.
I mean, there is a certain amount of ridiculousness to it all. But given what's at stake here and everything that's been said about the young man, you can see why there'd be at least some measure of speculation about it. But he showed up. And according to Ian Rappaport, he was the first one to work. Okay, that's cool. Later this week, and Gambo had this news, broke this news on Friday, if you weren't tuned into the Burns and Gambo show. Later this week, Kyler Murray will make a visit to the Cardinals. It is the second, well, the third, I guess, if you count the scouting combine, the third time that I know of that they've met face-to-face. They had once in Norman, Oklahoma a few weeks ago, and then, of course, at the combine.
And this would be the third.
This would be the third visit between
the
two.
Yeah, I'm expecting, as I said, I think not today, not tomorrow. So now we start looking at later in the week. You know, it could be Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, but later in the week. It won't be today. It's not going to be tomorrow. But Kyler Murray will be here for his visit. And again, I'm expecting it to be, mid to late part of the week. So not exactly sure Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, but sometimes towards the latter part of the week, Kyler Murray visit.
And it'll be another chance for him to impress, another chance for him another chance to get him on the whiteboard,
get him on the chalkboard, film
right?
session, go through the films with him. He's not going to work out at the facility. That's not going to happen. He's not going to go through a workout at the facility. I don't think that's allowed. But they could get him. They could meet with him. They could spend some time with him. They could get to know him. They can literally go over plays and film. Okay, what were you seeing here? What were you thinking here? And go over all these plays with them. They can get in front of the whiteboard and draw up plays and see that and just really pick his brain on his football IQ and his knowledge and what he sees on the field and just help you make this decision. And again, at this point, it is no decision yet on what they're going to do with Rosen or Murray. We've kind of said after the Murray visit, I can't imagine that I think they've got to be 100% then. We're either going to keep Rosen or we're going to draft Murray. It's just got to be, you got to be 100% after this Murray visit.
I don't know what else you would need to be 100% on what you're going to do. I mean, it's, unless it is, and we talked about this in the last segment, dependent on, well, we'll take Kyler Murray unless we get offered that. Or we'll keep Josh Rosen unless we get offered this. I mean, I would like to think that you, when you're sitting at number one, man, you've got a plan. This is the best player. This is the guy we're going to take. And it doesn't matter that we're not going to undo our plan based off of Oakland coming in at the last minute and making us an offer. Or based off of what, we can only get a third rounder for Josh Rosen? Oh, never mind. Screw it. We'll take Nick Bosa. If you like Kyler Murray, take Kyler Murray number one and kind of figure all that other stuff out later, right? Because you've got the power to be able to do that. Peter King, premier NFL writer. Doesn't mean he's always right, all right? He's just a well-known, well-respected, longtime NFL writer. Football Morning in America column this morning on NBC Sports. He makes it very clear this is not a mock draft. He's got his mock coming out in a couple of weeks, and we'll, I'm sure, pick through it then. This is instead what he says, what he thinks each team should do in the first round. Not trying to predict what they will do. This is what he thinks they should do. Of the Arizona Cardinals at number one, he wrote quite definitively, "I wouldn't even consider offers unless they're ridiculously excessive. Picking Murray here just makes too much sense with Kingsbury in love with them. Steve Keim has to figure, if I hired this offensive innovator as a coach and he wants Murray badly, why would we not give him what he wants? Even with a devalued Rosen going east," and we mentioned in the last segment of the show, if you missed it, Peter King speculates that Rosen's going to end up either with Washington or the Giants. "I think this is a move," he writes, "Arizona has to make."
Yeah, I have a hard time disagreeing with that. I mean, there is so much fanfare about Kyler Murray that it does make, I would lean that way right now. I would lean towards, I believe they're going to take Kyler Murray. If they don't go that direction, then I could almost assure you that the pick's going to be Nick Bosa. Not Quinnen Williams or anybody else. It'll be Nick Bosa. If they keep the pick, don't trade it, and aren't taking Murray. But there is so much with the Murray thing, and you know, and there's the other part with it is trading Rosen and trying to get something for him. But again, this Peter King piece is a good one. It's because what each team should do. Now, here's what they should do. And he just says it makes too much sense with Kingsbury in love with the guy not to take him.
Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network.
They are on their third different head coach in as many years, starting over again with Cliff Kingsbury, who is going to bring some unique things, some unique twists in terms of offense that maybe we haven't seen in the NFL in the past, based upon his background at the college level, the way that they've run things in the sort of air raid type of system, even though Kingsbury doesn't necessarily like the use of that term. It's going to be an adjustment period for everybody.
Heck, this morning, Herm Edwards, the head coach of ASU, even chimed in on Doug and Wolf about the Murray versus Rosen debate.
In Cliff's mind, what does he want? Does he want the drop back quarterback, move the pocket a little bit for him, but not a whole lot? Because that's probably Rosen's style, where the other kid is Kansas City. Right? I mean, that's who he is. Now, he's not as tall and all that, but that doesn't – we can forget about all that. I'm just talking about the style of the quarterback. Okay, so that's what you got to realize. You know, who is the guy?
The other kid is Kansas City.
Yeah, Mahomes.
Who was, by the way, at that Texas Tech
game. He was at the Texas Tech game.
Yeah.
Cheering on the Red Raiders.
Cheering on the Red Raiders. And so you got all these guys chiming in, and like we talked about on Friday, how much of the visit – will it confirm what you believe in him? I don't think it's the kind of visit that if you're the Cardinals and you know right now he's probably the number one pick. I doubt he's going to undo that with a visit. But I do wonder, and I wondered this on Friday when we talked about this, if the Cardinals right now have a lean in a different direction, stay at number one and take Bosa, or trade the pick to the Oakland Raiders if they want to move up to number one. I do wonder if there's something Murray can do later this week when he comes in that forces them to go, you know what, on second thought, screw it, we got to take the kid.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
I mean, that's what visits are all about.
Probably,
right?
Has that power, I would think. If there's a lean for Kyler Murray not to be the draft day selection, I wonder how much power, how much sway he has over them to change their minds.
It's kind of a job interview.
Sure.
I mean, that's what it is. It's a job interview.
Yeah.
We're going to bring you in. We're going to spend a whole day with you. It's a job interview. I mean, Bosa, Williams, those were job interviews. Do you want the guy? Do you not want the guy? Absolutely. And that's why I'm not ready to go past like 95% sure what they want to do. They probably have a really good idea what they want to do right now.
Pretty good idea.
Yeah, really good idea. You should. I mean, you should.
The variable, okay, they probably know what they want to do. The variable in all of this is how much are we going to get for Rosen if that's the road we go down? Or how much are we going to get for the number one pick if that's the road we want to go down, right? I mean, that's the unknown,
like we
of
said,
the equation.
That should not preclude you from making a deal.
Not at all.
I mean, if you want Murray, get Murray, regardless of what you could get for Rosen. You can't factor in what you get for Rosen as to the decision. If you love Murray and you want Murray, what the hell does it matter between a second-round pick and a third-round pick for Rosen? I mean, it is what it is.
There was a story on CardsWire.com today. If the Cardinals do decide to go down the road of trading the number one pick to Oakland, let's say, Mike Jarecki, our good friend, Cardinals insider over there with AZ Cardinals, thinks it would take all three of Oakland's first-round picks for the Raiders to get up to number one. They're at 4, 24, and 27. CardsWire speculated that they could probably get the deal done with two firsts and their second, if they were so inclined. That it wouldn't take all three first-rounders. They could get by with two of their first-rounders and their high second-round pick if Oakland were so inclined to move up to number one and get Kyler Murray. Jarecki thinks it'd be all three. He was cited in that story.
I'm going to say this again. Three players, if you love Kyler Murray, he's the best player in the deal. I don't know that three different players is going to change your mind on Murray.
Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday. It is presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, and we are giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to see the D-backs take on the San Diego Padres on Saturday, and the first 20,000 fans in the building are going to get themselves an Archie Bradley bobble gnome. Listen at 7:15, 10:15, 12:15, and 4:15 tomorrow for your chance to win. Suns are in the process of reshaping their front office, but what does the rest of the league think about some of the names being considered? We'll check in and find out next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
One final game left for the Phoenix Suns tomorrow night, taking on the Dallas Mavericks. And while the rest of the NBA gears up for the playoffs and what will be the fun of watching a team like the Nets making the playoffs for the first time in a while. That's pretty cool.
I know, right? You know the Nets!
The Phoenix.
Led by Jared Dudley.
The Phoenix Suns, in the meantime, have once again a lot of off-season decisions to make, in particular when it comes to their front office. And then we kind of wait and see how the lottery turns out. And joining us right now from the New York Times, their longtime NBA reporter, friend of the show. He's been on many times this season and in seasons past. Mark Stein joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Mark, thank you for joining us, sir. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. Good. So Jeff Bauer is the name that is starting to surface to the top of the Suns' front office search list. Tell us what you know and what you think about Mr. Bauer.
Well, look, he's obviously experienced. We've seen him in New Orleans. We've seen him in Detroit. And I don't know if the Suns have made a final decision. Don could probably tell you better than me. But around the league, everyone seems to think that this is going to happen, that it's going to be Bauer. And I think really the takeaway here is when word spread that the Suns were going to look to make a front office hire, I think a lot of people were expecting it to be, you know, a new guy in charge. And by all accounts, if Jeff Bauer is the hire, he won't be in charge. He will merely be advising James Jones and Trevor Buckstein. So I guess that basically means status quo. And the way the Suns have operated as a front office this season has not been met with great reviews. So if you're good with the status quo, then you're probably happy with it. I think it's going to land as a pretty uninspiring decision because not much is going to change. And that's not really a reflection on Jeff. Jeff has no shortage of admirers in the league, but I don't think he's going to be the shot caller.
No, he's definitely not going to be the shot caller. It will still be James Jones. He'll have the final decision on whether to keep the head coach and on the draft. And I do expect it to happen sometime within the next 24 to 48 hours. This will be done and Bowers will be, you know, brought in as a senior advisor. Now, Mark, I did speak with a bunch of NBA executives around the league who said this is an ideal fit for him. It's a good job. He's a nuts and bolts guy. He knows the process. He knows the salary cap. He's done a good job. And I agree. We all agree. Like, you know, this isn't going out there and going and giving the general manager's job to David Griffin and say, get this organization back on track. But they are bringing in a guy who does have experience. I mean, and he knows what he's doing. So in some ways, this will be the first time they're hiring somebody with experience to be in this type of capacity in at least the last 8-9 years.
Look, I'm hitting this from further afield. Obviously, this is your guy's backyard. You are watching this team every day, and I'm not. But some of the best years of my NBA life were spent covering the Suns in the 7 seconds or less heyday. And I started my first season in 93-94. The Suns were a destination franchise and a model franchise. And they are not seen as a model franchise. They are not a free agent destination. And this thing has veered farther off course to me than any franchise in the league. And I think a broader, more sweeping change is needed. You know, I know it is a fantasy of some Suns fans for David Griffin to come back, but the only way you're going to get David Griffin to come back is to give him full autonomy. And I don't want to sit here, ask Robert Sarver. I've always had a very cordial professional relationship with Robert. The structure that's going to be in place means he's still going to have the loudest say. And the reality is all owners have the loudest say. But I would have liked to have seen the Suns do something more dramatic here, more of a clean sweep, go out there and bring in someone to try a completely different approach. Because the current approach, even with a seasoned advisor, to me, it's not going to be different enough to make a dramatic change, and this is a franchise that needs a dramatic change.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be. Although they do believe in James Jones, they do like him in the organization, want to keep him around. He'll be the GM, and he'll have a senior advisor.
He might turn out to be a great GM. There, you know, he's very well respected among guys he played with in this league, And, you know, this, you know, it's not like this automatic doom. But, you know, if the Suns don't get the top two pick, that just puts even more pressure on this front office to do, you know, some magic and really dig out of the hole that this franchise is in. So, you know, yeah. that's what I would have advocated.
Mark, I think we all would have liked to have seen Dave Griffin come over. Now, I've spoken with Griff. I know he had a conversation with the Suns back in February. It was not an interview, but he did have a conversation with the Suns a couple of months ago, you know, about the process and things like that, but it was not an interview. It does look like he's got a good shot to get that New Orleans job. I think he's probably the favorite for the New Orleans job right now, but it is a guy that we had all looked at, and we have a lot of respect for Dave Griffin coming up through the ranks here. It is definitely a guy that we would have liked to have seen gotten an opportunity, but it was not an interview. He just spoke with the organization.
Look, I don't think he would have needed an interview by this point. Robert Sarver and David Griffin know each other well enough. I don't think that Griff would really need to go through an interview process. But look, I've heard some other names that have been in the mix that I'm not at a point where I can publicly divulge them. If I get to that point, I'll certainly report them. Gamble will probably beat me to it anyway. But the only way you're going to get a Griff or someone who's proven in this job a lot more authority than Jeff Bauer is going to get. And Robert Sarver didn't want to cede that much authority. Now, if that's because he is convinced that James Jones is the guy and wants to give him more time to control, that's certainly his prerogative. And look, I understand it, you know. Owner, you know, I mean, you guys know where I live. I'm based in Dallas. I've covered Mark Cuban forever, and sports writers are great at telling us guys who spend the money what to do, and I get that. You know, we think we have all the answers, and we're great at telling these guys, don't be involved. Spend your millions and stay out of the way. Obviously, as a practical matter, it doesn't really look that deep.
Yeah, we're having some bad cell phone issues. So we're probably gonna have to, yeah, say our goodbyes to more. He's just cutting in and out. We was having a hard time making it through there. But I imagine the point that he was about to make was, you know, that it's the owners, the sports writers, people like us tend to tell these owners what to do with their money all the time. And I'm sure that right, you know, it's Robert's team. He can do whatever he wants with the organization. He can make whatever choices that he wants with the organization. But I think generally safe to say that Mark Stein, not a huge fan, if this is going to be the move of the Phoenix Suns in hiring Jeff Bauer to be this advisory role, and it sounds like it's going to be.
Yeah, it will be.
It doesn't really sound like this is the cure-all that everybody is looking for.
It's kind of an
in-between. From this offseason.
It's kind of like it'll satisfy some and not satisfy others. It's kind of, hey, we need them to go hire somebody with experience. And they did. They're going to hire a guy that's been a general manager. This guy drafted Chris Paul. He traded for Blake Griffin. I mean, he's been a GM at different places. They bring him in, but they didn't go all the way, right? He doesn't have the full say and the authority to do everything. He's not the final say. They didn't give him full autonomy, and they didn't give him control of the organization. He's a voice. He's got a say. He's an advisor. He's here to help. He's here to give you advice. But it's kind of like an in between. They didn't go all the way and say, we are turning this organization that hasn't made the playoffs in how many years now? Eight?
Nine years.
To somebody, and we're getting out of the way, and this person's going to run everything, and that's it. They're not doing that. But they are bringing in somebody who's had experience, but that guy's not going to have full say. He's just going to be there to kind of guide and to help along.
The championship matchup is all set. The semifinal games this weekend did not pass without some or a lot of controversy. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Looking. It's Guy from the corner. From the wing. Hold on. Did I hear a whistle?
Wow.
We got a foul call.
The PA announcer actually announced that Auburn had won the game.
I didn't hear that, but I read that yesterday.
Did he really?
The PA announcer actually announced that Auburn had won the game.
After the three-pointer was missed.
The player who fouled the Virginia guy knew instantly. I read a quote from him. He said, I was focused in, and I knew that he called me for that foul. I knew that he did.
And it was a foul.
Oh, it was.
It was a foul.
It was absolutely a foul.
I mean, I hate to say it. Auburn was amazing, in coming back in that game. They were down 10 with 5 minutes to go, and they ended up with a four-point lead. They were literally up. They had, and then Guy hits a three-pointer with 7 seconds left. He hits a three-pointer. And this is, listen, free throws kill you. So Guy hits the three-pointer. It's 61-60. Harper, who's been amazing, the kid's been amazing, gets to the free throw line, 6.9 seconds left, makes the first one. Okay, you're up two. Make the next one, and you can't lose. You could tie, but you can't lose. Misses the free throw. And on the inbounds play, the kid's name was Samir Dowdy. He ends up with the foul.
Yep, of Kyle Guy.
Of Kyle Guy, who makes the three free throws, and Virginia wins the game. And you're Auburn, you're like, what
just happened?
What the hell just happened?
We were up by 4 points a second ago. What just happened?
What happened? We had a four-point lead with seven seconds left. How did we lose that game?
Guy hit the contested three. Your guy made only one of his free throws. And then, the play, look, your mind, my mind, the NCAA head of officiating in his mind, there is no question that Dowdy should have been called for that foul. None whatsoever.
Right?
That was a foul. It's the missed double dribble before that to me is
that
the
was
one.
The game.
Oh, that's the game.
Yep.
That's the game before the shot attempt from the corner, before the foul, before getting him with the hip. For whatever reason, the referee did not see that the Auburn player did not touch that ball and knock it out. It touches his foot. He picks it up with two hands and resumes his dribble. And credit to Gene Steratore, who was their kind of the rules expert, right?
Noticed it right away.
As soon as the game was over, he's like, yeah, who cares about the foul in the corner? Right. We need to talk about this. That is a double dribble. That is a double dribble,
and that is a turnover.
Yep, and it was not called. And Bruce Pearl this morning on Get Up said we all have to get over the fact that these guys just missed it.
There is human error involved in the game. Kids make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. Yes, officials will make mistakes. That's part of the game. Get over it. Sometimes they're going to go your way. Sometimes they're not going to go your way. Grow up. This is part of the game.
And he's the guy who got screwed. He's the guy that when the Virginia player got fouled, I thought Bruce Pearl's head was going to explode into a million pieces. He was screaming so angrily on the sideline. I thought Bruce Pearl's head was going to explode. He was so mad about it. Now he's telling us a couple days later, we just got to get over it.
Inbounds play.
Human error.
I mean, it's just, you can't foul, right? I mean, and it's not like he went up to block the shot. He realized when he was up in the air, okay, I can't touch him, and then the hip.
Yep.
The hip.
He had nowhere else to land. His momentum was carrying him into it. Look, the double dribble, and I saw Jay Billis this morning on Get Up, and Greenberg asked him, hey, I mean, should that be reviewable? And he said, look, I think we've got too many reviews in college basketball. As it is. You know, it's and the NFL, he believes the NFL is going down this slippery slope by being able to review calls when they're not called. He said, I just don't think you should allow the referees, if it's not called on the court, to give them the opportunity to review something that was. He's talking specifically about the double dribble, not the hip on the three-pointer. And credit to Bill Rafferty, who I still think calls an incredible game, incredible basketball game.
Yep.
When Kyle Guy calmly, coolly hit all three of those free throws, he let out the best ever onions that you ever heard in your life. Because it does. It takes such...
It's the game.
Onions to sit there and have three free throws, and you get iced after two of them. Didn't matter. He
just made his free throws.
He looked like he was ordering a latte at Starbucks, not with a trip to the national championship on the line.
7 seconds before that game time, 7 seconds, Harper misses the second of two free throws. Could have put him up by three, could have gave, and you know, up by three, then you can foul, right? I could foul you, I'm up by three. They did have one foul to give, right? They gave it, but on the inbounds play, I mean, if you're up three, I could play that game.
Yeah.
I'm going to foul you up three. I'm not going to foul you up two, but I'm going to foul you up three, let you take two free throws, get the ball back, and then I'll just take more time off the clock. And it didn't happen because Harper missed the second free throw.
So tonight it's Virginia, and we can debate all we want whether they deserve it or not. They're there. They're going to take on Texas Tech. That was one of the ugliest basketball games ever saw on Saturday between Texas Tech and Michigan State. At one point, I read this in the AP write-up of that game. I wasn't keeping track of this. At one point over a 2-minute stretch late in the first half, 8 shots went up, 6 didn't touch the rim.
That's
wow.
Okay, think about that for a minute.
They can't hit the rim.
2 minutes, 8 shots, only 2 of them even hit the rim. That's how ugly that game
Michigan
was.
State shot 31% from the field.
32.9.
31.9. 31.9.
Cassius Winston, 16 points, but he took 16 shots to get his 16 points, and he was held scoreless for 10 minutes in the second half.
I was watching that game, and it was the second half, and it was tied at 23. And you're like, what the hell? How many years?
What am I watching?
Well, they said, I mean, is this Rolly Massimino? Against Georgetown? I mean, what was the score in that game? I got to look that up. I mean, they said that was before, and then that was right before they changed the shot clock.
Yeah.
Jordan, right? Do me a favor, if you would, look up. I want to see where the line has moved. Look where tonight's over-under is. It was like 117 the last time I saw it.
That was more points. 66-64. When they beat Georgetown, when Rolly Massimino and Villanova beat Georgetown.
119? Tonight's over-under is 119?
119. Oh, damn, I don't know. I'm not a gambler.
That's 59-60. I mean, that is a terrible national championship.
Yeah, 60-50.
There was 112 in this one.
But is it? If it's a one-point game tonight, if it's 60-59, is that a terrible game?
A close game doesn't necessarily mean a good game.
No, I agree with that. It doesn't mean a good game.
It doesn't, but you would think.
I will say, Texas Tech, at the end of that game, they played Culver's floater and then his three-pointer. And, like, you know, they were up by 9 and Michigan State cut it to 1. Henry had the layup, cut it to 1. And then so there were some big baskets made in, like, the final 3 or 4 minutes of that game when they had to score. Like, Michigan State was down 9. I mean, the Mooney kid hit a three-pointer. It was 45-33. They were down 12. And then Michigan State cut it to 52-51. So they had to make some shots to get back into that game.
Look,
so the ending of the game was actually not that bad.
Just because it's a close game doesn't mean it's a great game. But if it's a close game, it at least guarantees that something interesting happened at the end. I mean, I think we can all agree on that, right?
Okay.
That something interesting will have had to have happened at the end of that game. So even if it is 60-59 and 119 points are scored, yeah, it'll set basketball back 30 years, but something compelling will have had to happen at the end of that game.
That's a great point. One of my favorite fights ever, was Julio Cesar Chavez knocked out Meldrick Taylor. Now, for 11 rounds, Meldrick Taylor basically won every single round. And it was a boring fight. He won almost every single round, but he was taking punishment to win the rounds, taking a lot of punishment. In the final round, with like literally 10 seconds left to go in the fight, Julio Cesar Chavez knocked out Meldrick Taylor. Knocked him down. He got up. He was chewing on his mouthpiece. Richard Steele was the referee. He looked at him. He couldn't understand what he was saying. He called the fight off. Chavez won by a knockout with a TKO with like no time left. So it's one of my favorite fights, but it was just like the last 20 seconds.
It was a terrible fight except for the last 20 seconds.
Right, yeah. The last 20 seconds were the most amazing in boxing. It was unreal.
Today, I saw this yesterday from Josh Weinfuss's Twitter account. A memo was sent out on the Texas Tech campus. They canceled classes tonight and tomorrow.
Good for them. Night classes.
Did you see them on Saturday?
If you got a class after 5 o'clock at night, you don't got to go to school.
No, what
they were rioting hardcore
at Texas Tech.
I mean, 4 or 5 cars overturned. I mean, it was
really
for the Final Four win. If they win tonight, they're going to go crazy.
Why do you overturn? What gives you the thrill of overturning a car?
I don't.
Like somebody thinks that's like cool.
I don't know. Who knows?
Man, these kids take too much Adderall in college.
Oh, no. I don't mean to go all Ryan Hatch on you. No. they did the same thing down in Tucson when U of A won it. That was 1997. That was 20 years ago. It's not like kids today. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. This is not specific to college either.
Anytime any L.A. professional team wins anything, that town goes crazy.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember Charles Barkley's message during the NBA Finals in 93?
Yes.
We want to save Chicago from burning. Yeah,
that's right.
We want to keep Chicago from burning down, so we're going to win a game tonight.
Anytime I think about riots for championships, I think about Lakers fans.
Yeah.
So it's not just a college deal.
Yeah, it's not a college thing. But they shut down campus tonight and all day tomorrow. You get the day off class.
We'll see. More people to riot.
Yeah. The Phoenix.
If they're in class, they wouldn't be able to riot.
The Phoenix Suns closing in on a new front office hire. Why exactly was Larry Fitzgerald involved, and what exactly is his role in the process? It's maybe the most curious thing that happened all weekend, and a lot happened this weekend. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Of all the things that happened this weekend, and there was a lot that happened this weekend.
It was a busy weekend.
Diamondbacks win 2-3 against the Boston Red Sox.
Took down the communists.
That was cool.
There you go. Communism did not survive
this is
in
like
Arizona.
Ronald Reagan telling Mikhail Gorbachev to take down that wall.
Yep.
Actually, that wasn't like what happened at all this weekend, but it was the closest thing I could come to communism. You had the national championship game decided, which will be tonight. The Final Four was played on Saturday. You had the Rosen. You know, today he shows up for work, ready to go. The Kyler Murray is gonna have his visit sometime later this week. There's so much going on in sports, and yet there is no question that the most eyebrow raising story, the one that I think most people were talking about when they went to work today, Larry Fitzgerald sat in on the Robert Sarver interviews for who the next front office guy was going to be for the Phoenix Suns.
He did.
What?
Yeah.
And
he watched Ja Morant too.
Yeah.
Right? Is he watching Ja Morant?
And of all the things that happened this weekend, in some ways, I think that actually might be the biggest story because it is the most unexpected. Wait, what? Larry Fitzgerald? So let's talk about this. Larry Fitzgerald's in on these conversations, these interviews.
Yeah.
What are we to make of that? Nothing? Everything? Something in between? How do we process that
information? If you make a big deal out of it, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, he's as long as he's not making the decisions.
Well, no. I would assume he's not making the decisions.
Look, the only thing I could take out of this is there's a unique friendship there between the two of them, and that Sarver is somewhat of a mentor towards Fitzgerald and helps him in business and finances. And Larry's very interested in those things. And, and listen, Larry's a smart guy. I mean, he has spoken in front of the 32 owners at the NFL owners meetings and got up there for 7-8 minutes. And he's a very bright guy and he could read people extremely well. And maybe it's just, get another voice in there. But I think part of it is just a mentorship more than anything. I think it's just, I think when Larry's
because
done,
Larry
he's not going to go be a coach or a GM. He wants to be in business. He wants to be in business and see how things work and things like that. So I think it's more of a mentorship than anything else.
So not a mentorship that one day Larry's going to have a role in the Suns front office somehow? And is a mentorship in that Larry one day might work for the Phoenix Suns, not in basketball operations, but in some sort of business capacity, or just a mentorship because Robert and Larry have struck up kind of a friendship and Robert thought he might be a good add to the room for whatever he brings.
I think that Robert just kind of took him under his wings.
Okay.
And there is like a friendship there, and they've spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
They're friends. Like, they are friends. Okay. They have a friendship.
They hang out together.
They hang out together. I mean, for what that's worth, I mean, he is helping Fitz with finances and business, and it's probably just, okay, listen, you want to tag along? I'll show you how things work on this end with doing this. Larry's probably thinking post-career right now. Probably you've been thinking about it for a while. Post-career, what am I going to do? And I don't think he wants to go be a head coach or be a GM. I think business is something he's very interested in. I think as good as Sarver's been financially, owning banks and with his money, that's a guy that he looks to for advice and support.
You know, I thought about this all weekend, and I hope I can even get this out the way I want to say it. I, after thinking about it all weekend, at the end of the day, I don't think I really had that much of a problem with it, even though it is such an odd look. I guess if I were, and I agree with you, it's not something to be made a big deal out of. But what it is once again an unconventional owner doing things unconventionally. And that part of it, I don't like very much. You know what I mean? Larry Fitzgerald doesn't need to be in the room for this. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't need to be a part in any way, shape, or form of the selection of the next quasi-decision maker for the Phoenix Suns. By having him in there, it lends itself to this idea that Robert Sarver, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go hire Lon Babbie to be my head of basketball operations. Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go hire Earl Watson to be my head coach, even though he's never done it before. You know, it lends to the, why do you need to have Larry Fitzgerald there? But that's just the unconventional nature of how Robert Sarver has run this organization for the last 10 years. And I don't like anything that reinforces that. But at the same time, and I want to make sure I say this too, Robert knows that, let's be honest, he's not all that super respected when it comes to him being the owner of the Phoenix Suns.
And Fitz is his ally?
Fitz brings respect, okay? Fitz brings Robert walks in a room. He might be respected as a businessman, but as a basketball guy, he doesn't carry a lot of weight with him.
How does Fitz give you that respect?
He doesn't in a basketball world, but just in a general sense. He is the most beloved professional athlete that this city has ever seen. All right? If I take him to Starbucks with me, I'm going to get respect. If I take him to Orange Theory with me, I'm going to get respect. Oh, you're hanging out with Larry Fitzgerald? He's the most popular guy ever.
He's the man.
He's Larry Fitzgerald.
Well, you must be somewhat cool then.
I'm not that Robert Sarver's trying to be cool, but I look, let's be honest, the Suns, in the basketball world, I don't know if Robert carries a ton of respect for his acumen as the owner of this team and for his perception around
the
league.
Very little.
Bringing Larry Fitzgerald with him, it brings up the credibility factor a couple of notches, the respect factor. Listen, not because Larry's some basketball savant, but just because Larry is a highly respected individual in all walks of life.
Listen,
it can't hurt to have him in there.
I don't know the guy that well. I've never been on vacation with him. I've never been to his house. I've never been out to dinner with him. I don't know him that well, but my guess would be that he could care less what people think.
Robert?
The fact that he's got Larry Fitzgerald with him, that he could care less. He's doing this guy a favor and he could care less because he's worth he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever he's worth, and he could care less.
He probably could care less.
That anybody is going to say anything about Larry Fitzgerald being in that room while they were going through this process. For him, this guy's been good to me. He's been good to me. And we have a friendship,
yeah.
And he wants to get in business, and I'm going to help him out. And if you don't like it, too bad. I mean,
I think you're right.
That is literally just my guess.
In a nutshell, I think you're absolutely right. If you don't like it, they're tough. I'm still going to invite him. I'm just offering an opinion on what because I had a lot of thoughts about that this weekend, and I couldn't quite pinpoint it into just one. It's weird.
It is weird.
It's not a bad weird necessarily, but it's weird.
It's a why weird.
It doesn't make any sense kind of weird. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast?
Yes, I have.
I know you have. Subscribe right now on your iPhone and your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. You can listen to it whenever you want.
At the gym tonight when you're out for a run.
Absolutely. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by National Bank of Arizona. Josh Rosen showed up for the first day of Cardinals offseason workouts. Is it a sign he could stay? Is it just a contracted employee showing up for work? We'll get to the bottom of it next on the Burns and Gambo show.